Luke chapter 15. If you don't have a Bible to follow along on and you'd like one, there's some at the back. If you don't own a Bible, we'd love for you to take one of those as our gift to you. So most of you know that this past summer you gifted me and my family, you gifted me with a sabbatical, and my family had the opportunity to travel across Canada from Edmonton. We didn't quite go coast to coast, but from Edmonton all the way to the furthest east point in Canada, in fact, in North America. And along the way, one of our experiences was visiting PEI, Prince Edward Island. And in the course of our time there, we were thinking about, Chrisleen and I had always had in mind that we wanted to take our kids to see the musical Anne of Green Gables. A little bit to my surprise, we realized in conversation that they didn't know anything about Anne of Green Gables. And I'm like, that's part of being Canadian. So anyways, we visited the historical site of Anne of Green Gables. Calvin astutely pointed out that it was a little odd to visit a historical site for a fictional place. And then we arrived in Charlottetown, PEI, and went to Confederation Center, the theater there, to look at tickets. And they said, you know, tickets starting at $20 or whatever, but I think there's only three seats at that price. So it ended up being pretty high. So we're thinking, okay, do we do this? Our kids don't know about this. Had a Brennan grumbling, like, I would never spend that much money on theater tickets. And finally we said, we're never going to be here together again, probably. So let's just bite the bullet and do it. And so we did it. We bought tickets and we went in, and certainly Brennan was a little, theater. And we watched Anne of Green Gables. Many of you are familiar with the story of Anne of Green Gables, Anne with an E. And it was amazing. It was a fabulous presentation of the story of Anne of Green Gables. And I remember in the midst of particularly the act one, seeing this precocious Anne with an E and all that goes on in the story, looking over and just seeing my boys beaming and laughing and thoroughly enjoying this story that they were so unfamiliar with. And it just filled my heart. It's just, for me, one of my favorite moments on our whole two-month sojourn to the East Coast was just the joy in that moment. The central theme of the passage that we're exploring this morning is abundant joy. The abundant joy of God. Every time a sinner repents, every time a sinner comes home, every time one of us comes into relationship with the Father. Here's the remarkable truth. I want to share this right off the hop, right as we begin. The remarkable truth that we encounter in this passage is that the God of the cosmos, the God who is beyond time, who is over all things, who made all things, and who by his power sustains all things, God Almighty, all-powerful, all-knowing, the God of the cosmos, is filled with an abundance of joy. And he celebrates, he rejoices every time a lost human being, every time a man or woman or child created in his image repents and enters into his family. God celebrates. He is filled with joy, abundant joy, infinite joy, overflowing joy. This morning we come to what is perhaps one of the most beloved chapters in the whole Bible, let alone the Gospel of Luke, Luke chapter 15. The entire chapter holds together thematically, but we're going to explore it in two chunks. This morning, we're going to look at the first 10 verses, the parable of the lost sheep and the parable of the lost coin. Next Sunday, we will look at the last part of the book and tackle the parable of the lost son. Now, quickly, before I read, there's some kids around, right? Kids, if you're in grade 6 or down, can you quickly come here? I need your help. If you would. I thought there'd be lots more of you than were earlier. But anyways, I need some help. Somewhere in this place, there's a $10 bill that I had that's gone. Can you help me find it? It might be under a chair or on a table or maybe around the stage and some of the plants. Just look. Can you help me find? I have a $10. Just go. Let's find it quickly. Let's look. Look under the chairs, maybe just crawl around. People don't mind them. Just, no, it's in this room, I think. But we can look around. Maybe underneath things. You can check in the plants or around this candle thing. It's got to be here somewhere. I had it earlier. Maybe look out. You can stick your hands into the plants and kind of dig around and look. Oh, we were really warm, I think. I think it might have been over where we were. Does it look really hard? Dig around. Can we find it somewhere? Just pull it out. We'll fix it later. Oh, what's this? I think you found it. Awesome! We found it! We found it! Can we... Well, that was mine. I was lost and I was looking for it. But you know, we need to celebrate. Any ideas how we can celebrate? Is there anything here that you saw? Why don't we share some Timbits, right? Grab the Timbits. There, you guys helped me find it, so just dig in. Maybe don't take the whole box. I think there's enough for at least, let's grab four and then grab a seat. I'll ask your parents for forgiveness later if you're all sticky messes. And thank you so much for helping me. And thank you, Chrisleen, for your grace as you repair that later. All right, just grab some and then head back to your parents if you would. If you have your Bibles, I invite you to open to Luke 15. I'm going to read verses 1 to 10. Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, "This man welcomes sinners and eats with them." Then Jesus told this parable. Suppose one of you has 100 sheep and loses one of them. Doesn't he leave the 99 in the open country and go after the lost sheep until he finds it? And when he finds it, he joyfully puts it on his shoulders and goes home. Then he calls his friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me, I have found my lost sheep." I tell you that in the same way, there will be more rejoicing in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous persons who do not need to repent. Or suppose a woman has 10 silver coins and loses one. Doesn't she light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? And when she finds it, she calls her friends and neighbors together and says, "Rejoice with me, I have found my lost coin." In the same way, I tell you, there is rejoicing in the presence of the angels of God over one sinner who repents. This morning, I want us to ask four questions in our time together. Question number one, what do we observe in these parables? What do we see happening? What can we observe? Question two, what is Jesus contending? What is Jesus arguing for? What is he trying to teach? Third, with whom do you identify? With whom do I identify as we read these parables? And then fourth, how will I respond? What do we observe? What is Jesus contending? With whom do we identify? And how will we respond? Okay, question one. Jesus tells two stories, two parables. They are similar but not identical. They have some differences. They're similar in four really obvious ways. Both of them are stories about something that is lost. Second, there is a search for that lost thing. Third, the lost thing is found. And then fourth, finally, there is great rejoicing. Both of these parables share that same sequence. In fact, the story that we'll look at next week shares it as well with them. There's this pattern. Something lost, a great search. Something lost is found, and then great rejoicing. That's how they're similar. But how are they different? Well, there's a couple things we can notice. First, we should recognize that there is an escalation, if you will, between the two parables. In the first parable, the shepherd has 100 sheep and he loses one. 1/100th of his flock is missing. In the second, this woman has just 10 coins, and she loses one. So there is this escalation. Second, we can also recognize that in the second, there's a little more stress on the searching. In the first, we're told the shepherd goes after the lost sheep until he finds it. The second parable fleshes it out a little bit more. Doesn't she, this woman who lost a coin, doesn't she light a lamp, sweep the house, and search carefully until she finds it? Now, a few other things that we can note about these parables as well. It's worth noting that in first century Palestine, an average flock of sheep would be somewhere between 20 and 200 sheep. So this shepherd has a fairly average flock at 100. Presumably, at the end of the day, he brings his sheep back home and he counts them as they go into the sheep pen, and he discovers that there is one missing, and so he leaves the sheep. We're not told this, but he leaves the sheep either in a sheep pen or under someone else's care, and he goes back out into the country to search for that lost sheep. He knows that it's not only lost, but it's in grave danger. Sheep don't have any defense against predators. I was going to make a cheap shot at the Oilers not having defense. But a sheep is a sitting duck. It's a sitting sheep. It's got no chance left alone. And so the shepherd goes and he searches. He searches until he finds it. He picks it up, puts it on his shoulders with joy. And he goes back and he hosts a massive celebration. In regards to the parable of the lost coin, this woman who loses a coin, the coin in question is a Greek drachma. It's typically the wage for a day laborer. You'd work all day and you'd get paid this. So on the one hand, it's not an enormous amount of money, but it is of incredible value to her. It's a lot to lose. This is not simply pocket change. She has a significant loss, and so she spends considerable effort. She lights a lamp. In small Palestinian homes, there would have been either no windows or small windows, so even if it's daytime, she lights a lamp, and she begins sweeping the house, going from wall to wall, corner to corner, around everything, looking for her coin, and finally she finds it, and in the same way as a shepherd celebrated, she hosts this great party to celebrate because she's found her lost coin. In both parables, there is this persistence of the searcher, the shepherd, this woman. They search and they search until they find what was lost. As a kid, I tended to be one of those kids who took care of my stuff, sports equipment and things like that. I tried to take care of it, clean it up, put it away, keep track of it. My younger brothers, not so much. And so we played a lot of road hockey and a lot of baseball, and that involves tossing a ball, tennis ball or baseball around, or shooting a tennis ball or hockey ball around. And inevitably, balls would go rolling into neighbors' yards and into bushes or over fences. And I remember my frustration as a kid. My younger brothers would barely expend any effort to look. If their ball went over the fence or into the bushes, like, I can't see it, they'd go to the garage. So quickly, they didn't have any left, so they'd start using mine. Didn't like that, because they didn't take care of them. They didn't search for it. And so there were some scraps. I was persistent. I would lose a ball and I'd go look for it. I'd dig around in the shrubs. I still do that today. The boys will cork a baseball into the forest and they'll go, "Dad, let's just get another one." I'm like, "No, let's find it." Persistent, searching. Some call it stubborn, but it's the shadow side of it. These searchers searched persistently. They looked and looked until they found what was lost. With that in mind, let's turn to our second question. What is it that Jesus is contending? There's a number of things we need to recognize. First, he's contending that we are all lost, that unless found, every single one of us, every single human being is lost, that is our spiritual status apart from Christ, apart from a relationship with God. Until we're found, we're lost. All of humanity, every single one of us. There are a variety of ways in which Scripture speaks about this, describes this condition of lostness. We're said to be dead in our sins. We're said to be God's enemies. We're said to be alienated from God, our Maker. Jesus is contending that apart from Him, apart from relationship with Him, apart from Christ, we are all lost. Second, Jesus is contending that God is like this shepherd, that God is like this woman. He's like the shepherd and the woman in these parables, that He is not content to leave us lost. That God is a searcher, that God is a persistent searcher, that He's searching even now, diligently, searching persistently to find those who are lost. This is a revolutionary thought. Not only will God welcome back a sinner who repents, but God is actually taking the initiative. He is out searching. He is out looking for. And He looks until lost people are found. Third, Jesus is contending that God rejoices, that God celebrates whenever a sinner repents, that his heart overflows with joy, that his heart bursts with joy. Think about that. Think about what Jesus is saying. He is saying that God's heart bursts with joy, that it overflows with delight because of you, because of me, because of every person who is lost when they are found, that God celebrates, that he rejoices, that he delights in that. He delights in us. That means for every single one of you here this morning, those who have repented and put their faith in Jesus, you who are followers of Christ, that means that there was a day, there was a moment where all of heaven rejoiced because of you. All of heaven threw a party. God's heart burst with joy and celebrated that you'd come home. You. Heaven rejoiced over you. For each of you here this morning who don't yet know Jesus, you've never put your faith in Jesus. Heaven waits. God searches. And when that day comes, when you put your faith in Jesus, there's going to be another party. There's going to be another celebration. God's heart will burst with joy. He will delight himself in your salvation. God is full of love towards us. God, in his great love, in his great mercy, loves lost people. He loves broken people. He loves those who are far from him. And he is a God who is searching, a God who desires that lost people be found. He longs to embrace lost people, human beings created in his image who do not know him, who are far from him. He longs to embrace them in his strong and loving and gracious arms. Do we get that? Do we see that? Do we believe it? Do we grasp the magnitude of that good news? This is the gospel, that because of his love for the world, John 3:16, because God, for God so loved the world, world there means humanity in rebellion against him. God so loved humanity in rebellion against him that he went on a search and rescue mission, that he sent his son Jesus, that God put on flesh and came to look for us. He came to search for us. He came to find us out of love for us. When we were his enemies, when we were rebels, when we were lost in sin and darkness and spiritually dead, God came looking in Jesus out of love for us, out of love for you. Let's be honest. It's hard some days, isn't it, to believe the good news? To believe that God really feels that way about you, about me, that he is delighted that you are his, that he remembers the day that you repented and entered into his family, and it was a day of great joy, abundant joy. When I was in grade 8, my school class, I was in French immersion, we took a trip to Quebec City. We stayed at this really neat hotel overlooking these waterfalls, Montmorency Falls. We went as a family there this summer in Quebec. And the staff organized for us students, grade 8ers, a dance in the ballroom of the hotel. I'd never been to a school dance. I'd never been allowed to go to a school dance. So this was my very first experience of a school dance. And I liked girls. I thought girls were awesome. But I wasn't terribly confident around girls. And I remember to this day, in that dance, at one point, working up the courage, and walking up to this girl named Brenda. She was blonde, curly hair, blue eyes, rosy cheeks. Walking up to her and saying, do you want to dance? And I remember the look, call it horror, that washed over her face. And she said, you want to dance with me? And I just, no, it's okay. Isn't that how sometimes we feel when it comes to God? We can't imagine that he would want us, that he loves us, that we bring him joy. But he does. That's what Jesus is saying, that the Father so loves you that when you entered his family, he celebrated. He was filled with joy, overflowing joy. That for those of you who have not yet trusted Jesus, that when that day comes, he is waiting. All of heaven is poised to celebrate. Question 3. With whom do you identify? I have not mentioned yet the context into which Jesus shares these parables. Look with me at verses 1 and 2. There we read, "Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathered around to hear Jesus. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, 'This man welcomes sinners and eats with them.'" Jesus is addressing a mixed group, can we call it. There are some religious people there, Pharisees, teachers of the law, those who take their faith very, very seriously, who strive diligently to keep the rules, to know what God's expectations are, to make sure they avoid those who are on the wrong side of the tracks, the unrighteous people. And then there are tax collectors and sinners. It's interesting that tax collectors are especially singled out. They're a special category of sinners. If you were a first century Jew, tax collectors were in bed with Rome. They had gone over to the dark side. They were employed by the empire to tax their own people. And they would, because of their greed, they would at the expense of their fellow Jews, they would take more than they were entitled to. And so tax collectors were especially hated. They were especially unrighteous, especially despised. They were sellouts. Tax collectors and sinners. We don't know what those other sinners were guilty of particularly, but clearly they were men and women of ill repute. Spiritual screw-ups. Unrighteous people. Jesus shares these parables to these two groups. And the spiritual rejects are drawn to Jesus. Which is an amazing thing we see repeatedly in the Gospels, isn't it? The wrong kind of people seem to be attracted to Jesus. At least they're the wrong kind of people if you'd ask the religious people, the Pharisees and the teachers of the law. In fact, not only did they come hang out with Jesus, not only did Jesus associate with the wrong kind of people, Jesus actually ate with them. He sat down and had meals. And in that culture, to share a meal was a sign of intimacy. It was a sign of friendship. And Jesus not only associated with them, he didn't just like deal with them in the crowds, he ate with them. And so the religious elites, the righteous people, grumbled. They were pretty cheesed off at Jesus. How can he do this? How can he sit with such people? He did both, associating with them and eating with them. And that didn't sit well with the religious ones. They saw themselves as righteous. They had their spiritual act together. They followed the rules. They stayed within the boundaries. They avoided the immoral people, the sinners. But not Jesus. He attracted them. Like iron filings to a magnet. Do they still do that, kids, in science class? Do you know what an overhead is? When I was a kid, on an overhead, the teacher would pour out iron filings on the overhead so you'd see it projected up on the wall. And then they'd put a thin sheet of acetate, I think it's called, over top of that, and then drop a magnet. And all the iron filings would just go to the magnet. And you'd see that. I read this and I think, that's the effect Jesus had on spiritually screwed up people. On tax collectors and sinners, they were drawn to him. It's to this group of people, Pharisees and teachers of the law, righteous ones, religious ones, and tax collectors and sinners, spiritual screw-ups, that Jesus shares these stories. With whom do we identify? With whom do you identify as you hear these stories? These stories of God's lavish grace, God's lavish love, God's searching for people who don't have it together. God's searching for sinners. God's celebrating, not when someone cleans themselves up and kind of like, okay, I got it together, but when sinners just turn to him, they repent, and God goes, woohoo! Party! Right? God's heart overflows with joy. He celebrates. So with whom do we identify? With whom do we identify? Do we find ourselves bothered by the company Jesus keeps? Or do you recognize yourself to be standing in the midst of that motley crew of tax collectors and people of ill repute, amazed that Jesus seems to actually like you? What is it Jesus is aiming to do to communicate here with these two parables? He wants to reveal to us the heart of God. Do you remember what happened in the passage before this? Jesus spoke about the cost of discipleship. That passage ended with these words, "Whoever has ears to hear, let them hear." Our passage opens with this, "Tax collectors and sinners gathered around to hear Jesus." Those who fail to see their need, those who think they're doing pretty good, those who fail to recognize their lostness, end up being those who fail to hear. And the spiritually screwed up ones, they gather around to hear. They're the ones who have ears. Question 4, how will you respond? The God of the cosmos, the God who stands beyond time and space, in creation, the God who made all things, the God who made you, to reflect his character, to know him, to live in fellowship with him, the God who is all-powerful and all-knowing, the Alpha and the Omega, God of the cosmos, is filled with joy, is filled with delight every time a human being turns to him. Overflowing joy, infinite joy, celebration in heaven. Let me address those of you here this morning who do not yet know Jesus. You've never put your faith in him. You've never turned and surrendered to him as Lord and King. I want to speak to you. Jesus here confronts you, confronts all of us, that apart from Jesus, apart from faith in him, that you are lost, that you need to be found. Now that might strike you as offensive, but that is the truth of what the scriptures teach us, that every one of us apart from surrender to Christ is lost. For all have sinned, we read, and have fallen short of the glory of God, that apart from Christ we are dead in our transgressions and sins, that we are lost, that we need to be found, that we need to be rescued, that we need to be saved. But Jesus also contends here. He also confronts you with the fact that the Father, that God is searching for you. He's looking for you. That he loves you. That he longs for you. He knows everything about you, and his heart is for you. He longs to hold you in his loving and gracious arms. And he's waiting. All of heaven waits, poised to celebrate, poised to let the joy erupt if you will just surrender to him, if you'll just turn to him and say, I need you. So how will you respond? Even this morning, you can choose to turn to him. You can surrender to the God of the universe who loves you. You can surrender to his grace. You can surrender to his mercy. You can surrender to his longing. And you can rest in his joy and delight over you. To those of you here who have already put your faith in Jesus, you've repented, you're following Christ. My prayer, my hope is that you will have in these stories, that you will again have seen, that you will have glimpsed maybe a little bit more fully God's great love for you, His desire for you, His longing for you, His joy and delight over you. And it doesn't come from Him because you've managed to pull your spiritual socks up. It doesn't come when you get your spiritual act together, when you've cleaned yourself up. No, God searches for sinners. He knew everything about you, and He drew you to Himself, and He loved you then, and He loves you now, and His heart is for you, and He is filled with joy that you are His. He delights over you. You are precious and loved by the God of the universe. I pray that you glimpse that again this morning, that you see that, that you relish that, that you rest in it. But as we begin to glimpse that, that can't be, as we begin to just rest in and rejoice ourselves in God's joy over us, His love and grace, our response cannot and must not end there. Daryl Bach writes this: finding lost sheep and missing coins is a disciple's priority. Jesus involved Himself with sinners, so should disciples. God and Jesus came to earth on a search and rescue mission. God came to search for those who were lost. He came to search and redeem and rescue you and I. And as His beloved disciples, as His disciples in whom He delights, we ought to have this transformed, our hearts transformed, that we would feel this joyous compulsion to then go and search for lost sheep, that we would go and search for lost coins, that we would seek to make Him known, to make His love known, to make His grace known, to make His joy known. Because there all around us are people who are lost and do not yet know the only hope that is found in Jesus. And thus, as the shepherd in this story, as the woman in this story, we ought to be moved to search diligently. I want to share two thoughts about what that looks like for us to be people, disciples who follow in the footsteps of God. That we would, first of all, be a searching people. That we would have our eyes open to those around us who do not yet know Jesus. Statistics say that 2 years after coming to faith, the vast majority of Christians no longer have non-Christian friends. That ought to break our hearts. What does it mean to be people who search for lost people if it doesn't mean that we engage in relationships and love them and have them in our homes and we enter into their homes and we help raise their kids and we just engage in life with those around us? Yes, as the church, we desperately need fellowship of the body. We need to encourage one another, build one another up. And we need to go out into the world and search for lost sheep and lost coins. We need to engage in friendships with people who don't know Jesus. When's the last time you had a non-believing friend in your home? When's the last time I did that? Is that a regular part of our life? Are we looking for open doors? Are we looking for those opportunities where we can step into dark places where there are people who are lost, who desperately need the good news of God's love and God's grace, and they need to hear that God is poised to celebrate their surrender to Him, that He delights in them? We need to be searching people. We need to live on mission. We need to live as missionaries here now, because that's who we are. We are children, daughters, sons of a missionary God, a God who came to search for the lost, and that ought to shape us. Not only ought we be searching people, but we ought to be attractive people, and I'm not talking about this. We ought to be attractive people. Not because of who we are in our own strength, but because Christ lives in us, because Christ is transforming us, and that day by day we reflect the love and the grace and the compassion and the mercy, the care of Christ to those around us. That that as Christ lives his life in us, other people would be drawn to us, not because of us, but because of Jesus. That the effect Jesus had on lost people would be something that we begin to see happening in our own lives. We would see lost people around us who are drawn to us, who want to spend time with us, because Jesus is so transforming us, Jesus is so living in us, he's shining out of us. And that can be a daunting thing, let's be honest, but that can be our prayer daily, can't it? Jesus, I no longer live, but you live in me. Jesus, manifest yourself in me. Jesus, show your love, show your compassion, show your care to my coworkers, to my neighbors, to my my fellow students, to the kids on the basketball team I coach. God, show yourself, because you are the one who is supremely attractive. Manifest yourself in me, Jesus. In a moment, we're going to conclude. Before I do that, I want to ask you a question. What is the Spirit saying to you today? What is the Spirit of God doing in your heart right now? And in a moment, I'm going to invite you, if you're here and you've never repented, you've never surrendered to Jesus, you've never turned to him and say, Jesus, I need your grace. I'm so drawn to you right now as I hear about your great grace and your great love that I want to give myself to you. That might be you here this morning. You've never done that. I invite you, if that's what the Spirit of God is doing in your heart, that this morning you would stand in a moment, there's going to be a song playing, that you would come forward, and in the basket there's a little candle, and you can grab it, and you can light it off the Christ candle, and stick it in the sand as a testimony that right now, today, there's a celebration in heaven. That God is delighting over you, that you surrender, that you've come home, that he's found you. And for those of you who are already believers, already followers of Jesus, what's the Spirit saying to you? Maybe there's something that you're recognizing, just like, God, I want you to shine through me, Jesus. I want to live a life searching for others. I want to engage intentionally to love those who are far from you. I want to be with those who desperately need you and don't know of you yet. Maybe that is taking shape in your mind and there's some practical step that you go, God, I feel you calling me to make this commitment. I'm going to invite a neighbor over for dinner. I'm going to have a coworker go out for coffee with them. I'm going to, whatever that might be. Or maybe it's just a general sense that, Lord, this is resonating with me. I don't know what it looks like in my life, but I want to commit myself to this. I want to invite you to lead me and show me what this looks like. Then I invite you to come forward and take a candle out of the basket. Light it on the Christ candle and stick it in the sand as a pledge, as a response to what the Spirit of God is saying to you today. We worship a God who is so in love with us, so loves us, is so gracious towards us, who delights in us, whose heart overflows with joy, who is poised with all of heaven to see others who are lost turn to him, to celebrate. Jesus reveals God to us. This is what God is like. This is God's heart for you and for the lost world around us. May we respond faithfully to his love, to his grace, to his delight, to his joy. So I invite you, as this song comes, as this song plays, I invite you to come. Respond to what God's saying. And when we've finished, the worship team will come and lead us in a closing song.
What will people say of me?